quite live yet, but we're getting there. We're, what, a week back in time? Anyway, there's this band that you may have heard of called Smashing Pumpkins, which I went to the same high school with, and somebody told me we went to school at the same time, but then he found out he was 10 years older. I felt like you told me he was 10 years older, and right. So it wasn't, and I felt like a complete jerk because I believed somebody without actually looking it up because, frankly, I didn't care, but I thought it was a fun bar conversation. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're talking about Smashing Pumpkins for some reason. Dave, why are we talking about the Smashing Pumpkins?
So I was reading an article the other day, and I stumbled across Billy Corgan's Twitter feed, which unfortunately is filled with all sorts of conspiracy theories. Apparently he buys it all, like chemtrails, definitely, anti-vax, definitely, like it doesn't matter what it is, he will buy it, which is so disappointing. Like as a big fan, like I am a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan, and Smashing Pumpkins fans have to, if you will forgive the phrase, bear the cross of a lead singer who is a tool. And everybody hates him, and, you know, you can't defend the guy. It's like, yep, he's a jerk.
Heck of a guitarist, though.
Heck of a guitarist, and heck of a songwriter.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the stereotype of the lead singer of the band being kind of a tool.
There's the idea that the lead singer or the lead of the band is going to be a complete iconoclast jerk. And then there's Billy Corgan. I mean, really?
I believe Sharon Osbourne once said she wouldn't hire him to be a roadie. Like, but yeah, and you can't defend these stories and stuff like that. But I have to say,
the last time I remember seeing Billy Corgan in any sort of mass media, he was like completely stark bald. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if he was using chemtrails as such a cheap shot, but like if there was some sort of explanation, they took my hair away. The Bilderberg group wants my hair. And I don't know.
Although another strange thing on his Twitter feed, really great with fans. Like he's really all about shouting out to fans and saying thank you and talking to them and everything. And then says, yeah, sorry, sad about those chemtrails and the government trying to kill us all. It's like, what? Yeah.
It's great to have all the fan support. By the way, the universe is a hologram.
Apparently he shows up on Alex Jones' show, which I guess should be
awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
His music's good, though.
Yeah. Even the newer stuff, which everybody hates, I still think was pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I liked their last album.
Well, you know, just to keep our mass media stuff happy here, there's a movie out, which apparently we all need to see.
Popular culture.
Yes.
Ooh.
Actually, I don't think I introduced you, Rosalind. Hello, Rosalind.
Hi. How are you?
How are your things?
Good.
Okay, good.
Okay, keep going.
All right, we're done. PureFlix, makers of God's Not Dead, are releasing their newest film, Do You Believe, in theaters this weekend. The story follows a paramedic who sued for trying to convert a patient who's dying. Reviews for the film are impressively terrible.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
The thing about these films is, like, you know the reviewers are going to tear it apart, but the fans of the movie are going to be like, it's the greatest thing ever!
Yeah. I would bake this in bread and then inject it into my eyeballs.
This movie tells
me... That sounds painful.
This movie reminds me how persecuted I am as a white male Christian.
Yeah.
Is there like a small little clutch of atheist fans of these films, like for the so bad it's good quality?
You're looking directly at one right
now. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you're talking about it in such enthusiastic terms, I had to wonder.
All right. We have some reviews here. Do You Believe will no doubt play well with viewers already predisposed towards liking it because it has been designed to reconfirm their already deeply felt beliefs rather than doing anything that might cause them to think about or challenge those beliefs in any meaningful way. Peter Zabzinski, RogerEbert.com.
So, life question on this one. Is it at all expected that a movie like this should bring up serious questions? Like, is that a fair criticism or, you know, are they allowed to have their backpatting movies?
Well, they already had their backpatting movies.
They have a backpatting society.
They had Hercules come out and tell them how awesome they are and give them all individually a candy bar.
I can't even watch that show anymore. Like, it hurts too much.
I have to admit, the first season of Andromeda, the only good season, has already kind of ruined for me.
Yeah.
Not that it wasn't already ruined, let's be honest. Only the converted are going to be able to watch the more heavy-handed sections without cracking up. The climax left me in stitches. Jordan Hoffman, The Guardian. Ooh, I love that.
See, now that's
gives me
that's,
chills.
That's actually a review that makes me want to see the film. I want to see how bad this.
I'm eventually going to see these movies. I haven't seen them yet because I haven't found a context in which to watch them that doesn't give ammunition to some Christian who does what I call the Mac Bolan effect, which is they can't find persecution in their own life. They live in a context where they must have persecution, so they have to go into the like dirt cheap dime store fiction in order to find it.
I watched the first movie with a bunch of friends of mine, and we made a drinking game out of it.
Ooh.
And I think the only way that would have made it, that was the only way it was bearable, because I think if I were watching it without playing the drinking game, the only sort of entertainment value I would have been able to glean from it was measuring my own facial muscles convulsing and like cringing.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a meetup coming on here.
Uh-oh.
Maybe we could get something at the grub cage going.
That would work.
Can anyone afford in a bar to do a drinking
game
for this?
Well, the idea is, yeah, you dig under the shelves and you find those bottles and then you offer them for reasonably lower.
The ones in like the old milk cartons, yeah. It's great. Alcohol.
Kentucky Benzene.
We could do this as a fundraiser and fund the show for 3 years.
That's possibly true.
Streamathon.
Oh, boy. Do you believe spews its venom upon trade unions, the medical establishment, and the American legal system, all variously depicted as secular strongholds hostile to anyone who dares reveal him or herself as a true believer? It proves about as spiritually enlightening as a Kmart throw rug.
That's a brilliant line.
Scott Foundas, Variety. Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so the whole premise of this movie is there's a paramedic and he's being sued by the atheism community.
Pretty much.
Because there's a guy on the floor going, I'm bleeding, please do something. And he goes, have you heard the good news? Yes, bleeding, help me.
You're alternating simultaneously between like a Muppet voice and Beavis and Butthead. It's kind of great.
Have you heard of Jesus, dude?
No, that was the Muppet bit.
Have you heard of Jesus?
No.
No. Bleeding. Help me.
Need stitches in my cornholio.
So the guy. Oh, jeez. So.
What have I done?
The guy. Oh, man.
The guy.
So the guy dies. Well, we also have apparently a star-studded cast, as you were pointing out.
It's actually pretty impressive. This movie has Mira Sorvino, Sean Astin, who we all know as Samwise Gamgee, the sidekick of Frodo.
Did we just ruin?
I hope not. I'm not sure I can watch this because Sean Astin's been in too many movies I love. I can't not watch.
Yeah.
So Delroy Lindo, who, you know, honestly, he usually ends up with the parts that Samuel L. Jackson refused. But that's not to say he's a bad actor. He's actually really, really good.
Yeah.
He was in Get Shorty, and yeah. Brian Bosworth, former Seattle Seahawks linebacker.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know, the boss.
Seal of quality there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of refreshing almost, or comforting, that my entire lack of pop culture knowledge is not ruining all modern media for me, because I'm hearing the cast of this movie and not recognizing a lot of the
games.
Is the
sad thing the first name I recognize? Brian Bosworth. is that me?
No. I how about Lee Majors?
Lee Majors. I know that name. Why do I know that name?
Lee Majors. He's from old westerns.
Oh, that Lee Majors.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I was thinking Lee Van Cleef.
I was thinking Robert E. Lee. I'm like, wait a minute, he's not around anymore.
And Sybil Shepherd.
The last time I saw her, she was
moonlighting.
Yeah, helping get Bruce Willis's career started.
Actually, she played the mom in Psych. I don't know if you've ever watched Psych. It's a lot of fun.
I have not watched Psych.
It's a lot of fun. It's surprisingly entertaining. There's a lot of late 80s, early 90s references that are kind of right in my wheelhouse.
Okay.
So it's one of those shows where it's like the first sort of generation of shows where the writers are the same age as me, so they make the same references that I would.
So it's the kind of show where they might actually reference
Brian
Bosworth.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Instance.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or Smashing Pumpkins.
The
circle
is
complete.
They did Twin Peaks episode with the original Twin Peaks cast, which was amazing.
Yeah, they're redoing. They're not. They're not rebooting it. They're.
It's like a sequel.
Continuing it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. That has something to do with atheism. Let me think about it. Nah, I can't. It's got demons in it.
Watching that show.
You think we're demons sometimes? There's a leap.
I guess.
How about this? You watch a few episodes of that show and you cease believing in anything.
actually, you would find the Kmart carpet as or the Kmart throw rug as having
well, here you go. I was in a student film for somebody who was for the guy who's the general manager at the radio station we started out at.
Mm-hmm.
And his student film was called The Devil and David Lynch.
Oh,
and I played the devil.
Nice.
And I refused to watch it because I'm terrified.
I seem to remember The Devil and David Lynch being what Billy Ray Cyrus blamed for Miley Cyrus's going off the deep end. He blamed The Devil and David Lynch.
Like both of them?
Yeah, because Billy Ray Cyrus was in Mulholland Drive.
Oh, yeah.
Which led him to move his family out to Hollywood, which led to his daughter getting a job with Disney, are becoming
gonna,
a star.
Are we going
to
start playing 2 degrees of Kevin Bacon now? Like,
well, I just remember because Mike said, after hearing this, like, I want to see The Devil and David Lynch as like a buddy cop film where... The devil is a straight-laced cop, and David Lynch is a, like, rebel.
I'm game.
Yeah,
I'll totally reprise my role for that one.
There we go.
Yeah, so these movies, like I said before, it's, you know, you're white, you're privileged, you have privilege of just about anything you can in America, and but you have this catechism, this ideology that in order to be properly religious, you must be persecuted. And it's getting harder in these days. It's kind of hard to find that persecution when you basically own half of politics.
Right.
So they have to go to this total lightweight bubblegum movie stuff. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC. 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, get some local news out of the way. And then stuff.
Experience Mile High Humanism at the annual conference of the American Humanist Association, May 7th through 10th in Denver, Colorado. Network with chapter leaders, become a trained humanist celebrant, and hear from Lawrence Krauss, Marcy Hamilton, writers from The Onion, and more. Camp Quest is providing childcare, so bring the kids. High school and college students qualify for reduced registration fees. Go to conference.americanhumanist.org and register today.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. This episode is pre-recorded, but you can leave us a voicemail if you like. Toll-free nationwide. And we have some local news. We can mention nationwide, but really we're talking about local. So Pierce County, this my story, apparently. Pierce County... The Pierce County Council has installed a plaque stating "In God We Trust" that was approved last summer. The plaque went up on the back corner of the council chambers with a little fanfare last January, along with another plaque with the Latin phrase "E Pluribus Unum." The original bill was passed last August over objection of numerous constituents and two members of the council and two, three members of the cast. Several members of the cast.
Hi, I'm a constituent. Yeah. I don't like this.
Hey, I think you had your picture going at them was really good. So when we went down to Clark County, I didn't think the sign was up, but apparently it went. The sign went up, and they told no one.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I think something might need to be done here. I'm beginning to feel like this "In God We Trust" in county chambers thing might be my thing.
Mm. This is going to be your.
Yeah, because you know it's got none of the. It's got none of the. There's nothing around it.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's a chaotic battle, quixotic.
Quixotic?
Go with one of them.
I think it's quixotic.
It's you attacking windmills.
Quixotic.
Sure.
I'll do pronunciation guide. Quixotic.
Quixotic.
Quixotic. Yeah, because it's, yeah, one, it is the nation's motto, and that kind of stinks. But the other thing is it has, it's a very clear moral argument. It's a very clear moral battleground. In that, you on one side you have people who hang out with David Barton, people who hang out with who talk on the 700 Club, people who believe that the entire Left Behind series should be entered into the congressional record, and on the other side you have pretty much everyone else. Like, I mean, us, you know, yeah, we're kind of the vanguard because this is our fight, but like everybody is like, this is really a bad idea.
I feel like honestly, the vast majority is like, yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah, I'd rather you didn't, but
it's also kind of a interesting microcosm of the larger issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, sticking to working within this sort of purview is a good way to look at the greater issue at hand, too.
I know I'm not alone in this. Why do people like unwinnable battles? I don't get that. It's something I fall prey to a lot, but. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
Been kind of the basis of Western literature for thousands of years.
That might be it.
Guy has impossible battle. News tonight.
Well, like, and there's...
Yeah, Karate Kid.
There you go.
It's actually, there's a nature in sort of American culture. Okay, I'm just going to let that one slide. But American culture has a thing about losses. Like,
yeah.
Most countries, they want to remember their victories. But us, we want to remember the Alamo. We want to remember Pearl Harbor. We want to remember 9/11. We want to remember when we got our butts kicked. For some reason, that motivates us more than remembering the rest of World War II, say.
So underdog worship, if I may call it that, is it more American than it is human?
I would say, yeah. Like, I would say you could definitely make that argument.
Who would I go for an expert opinion on this?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
Yeah. Folklorist?
Folklorist.
Yeah.
Florist.
We're not doing pronunciation guide again. Having a serious conversation here for a minute.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I go on vacation and my mind just loosens.
Nurse!
Yeah, all right, so we have some more serious news that we should discuss before we get back to the fun stuff, but another month, another attack. Two gunmen dressed as security officers killed 22 people and injured 50 others at the Bardo Museum in Tunis, Tunisia. The attackers killed 9 tourists outside the museum before taking a number of hostages, particularly killing the two gunmen, but not before a number of hostages were killed. The attacks have not been linked to Islamic extremist groups, though authorities think it likely. So I remember hearing an interview with somebody from the government of Tunisia, somebody in their security forces, saying that they were keeping tabs on one of the gunmen, but they said not for any specific reason, which is like, well, then were you just keeping track of everybody? Because that's the thing that happens now. But...
figure it's a lot easier in Tunisia than it is here. There's a lot fewer people to keep track of.
We got, yeah.
Well, you got to remember they just had a revolution.
Yeah. So.
Well,
and that's one of the things that's really frightening about this whole situation is that they are becoming one of the more liberal democracies in the area because of this revolution. They were actually moving away from extremism. And of course, that's going to make them a target, which this is... You know, once again, there is no actual link established, so I won't say it definitely is, but it's probably, you know, this is...
It's kind of an interesting discrepancy in a way, because all of the things that I've been reading have indicated that the majority of, or the most people who go to join ISIL from any given country are Tunisian, which is kind of weird because... Tunisia is the success story of the Arab Spring. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. Although I sort of wonder if Egypt is going to pull ahead, because they had their weird Muslim Brotherhood thing, and then like the populists sort of as a group said, enough of that, please.
Well,
yeah.
There's tons of different, you know, cultural and socioeconomic things involved there as well. I'm curious as to how much aid the United States gives Tunisia, and I know they give tons to Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. You had a very interesting opinion on this one.
Well, and this is going to sound terrible of me, and I understand that. But there, you know, after hearing the stories of the way ISIS is attacking museums in Mosul and destroying artifacts that are thousands of years old, trying to delete the history of the Middle East, which is the history of culture, because that's where culture started. And I was actually, you know, I don't want to say relieved, but there was a sense of relief when I found out in this attack that none of the artifacts were destroyed or even focused on, that it was entirely focused on people, which is tragic. And I'm not trying to belittle that tragedy, but there isn't that added thing of trying to delete history.
Right.
Which, you know, I don't know if that sounds callous or terrible, but that it was a thought I had when I was reading this story.
There are two points to that. I mean, on the one hand, yes, it is a bit callous. There's also a weird sort of callousness because we're a bunch of Westerners talking about foreigners being killed. Mm-hmm. And ISIL has been, you know, slaughtering basically a lot of people who were local to the region that were kind of, frankly, I'm so uneducated into the topic. There are people who have died and I'm just kind of glossing over that because Tunisia is what we're talking about right now.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But getting into that a little bit with the idea of artifacts and things being destroyed. On the one hand, those are the leftovers of a sum of a portion of humanity that is already long gone. Like all of those, the ancient sculptures and the beginning of culture and all those things you were talking about, if they were destroyed, we would lose that whole chunk of humanity in and of itself. But there are also people right now who are dying, too.
Right.
And it's difficult either way. I mean, I would much rather that the people be alive in something that is endemic of or emblematic of humanity be destroyed, but I don't know. It's really tough.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a particular mindset that's been ingrained on us as Americans who've paid attention to education, that knowledge has intrinsic value in and of itself, and historical knowledge, especially because it's the narrative of the human race, and it gives us, it gives us a position on the map, basically. And I think why this might be so terrifying, oddly terrifying, because it's like, why is it worse when they go after the history? Because you kill one person, you kill one person. When you go after the historical documents and you go after the artifacts of history, and when you try to basically erase history, you're affecting everyone. Mm-hmm. Now we are entering the territory of 1984.
Right.
Where they're trying to make it so that it's not possible to dissent. And that to Americans who've been raised on this, on the rhetoric of freedom of expression and freedom of thought, might seem terrifying above and beyond mere murder, which sounds completely callous. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
White middle class Americans. I think there are a lot of other
I would say it goes a little deeper than that.
The thing is, like, as tragic as it is to see a group of tourists from all over, you know, Finland, Japan, Italy, you know, tourists from all over the world. Not many Tunisians were actually killed in this attack.
Right.
It's incredibly tragic, but their deaths is not going to delete a culture.
Right.
And that's what attacking history might do.
Yeah, I'm usually willing to go along with white middle class Americans on this sort of thing, but the freedom of knowledge, freedom of expression,
right,
has such a core value even to the civil rights movement
yes,
that I think it extends beyond the privileged people of America. I think it's one of the core values of America.
Right. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, perhaps Western culture has had its own share of that in some certain ways.
Oh, it absolutely has.
Definitely, you know, genocide of certain peoples occurred. So.
Yeah, well, we can talk about the genocide, but we can also talk about, I can never get the Latin of this right, damnatio memoriae in Rome, which is whenever a popular person was bad or Rome didn't like, they would basically erase them from history. Not particularly effective, but they tried.
Right.
Right.
Then we can talk about, you
Egypt,
know,
I remember that occurring a
Egypt,
lot there, too.
We can talk about, loss of knowledge and sometimes intentional loss of knowledge in the dark, quote-unquote, dark ages. I mean, yeah, Western.
Or think of the way we tried subjugating all the Native Americans into white culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, there's enough historical precedent there.
Right.
I'll be honest with you, though, watching it, like I think I've mentioned this before, watching it on television had a much larger impact than the historical objects thing.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I think if I hadn't seen it, if I hadn't been watching,
it does.
It might have hit me differently.
It keeps it out of your monkey sphere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that might be it. Well, more locally, and I think a little bit more obvious.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. A cathedral in San Francisco has been heavily criticized for a sprinkler system installed in their doorways to keep homeless people from sleeping in them. St. Mary's Cathedral, home to the Diocese of San Francisco, installed sprinklers 2 years ago after hearing that similar systems were used in the city's financial district. The San Francisco Department of Building Inspection has issued a notice of violation, claiming that the spout is unpermitted. The diocese was given 15 days to remove the system and has begun the removal already.
Now, I put this thing on Facebook about this. I have very few examples in my life when all of my Christian friends and all of my atheist friends and everyone unites in a single voice to say, wow, that is a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
Like, the level of hypocrisy of the Catholic Church saying, no, we can't have homeless people sleeping. You know, we're going to set up. You know,
we're basically going to take a giant spray bottle and go, no, no, no.
Yeah.
You can't sleep here.
And here's the thing.
Wow, I hadn't heard it put that way.
Fundamental gross mentality.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And here's the thing. They had to spend money to install a system, money that they could have used to feed people and give them homes.
The same folks who are, you know, sleeping on their front porch because they have nowhere else to go.
Exactly. Well,
honestly, I would be happy. I would be running down the street in joy if this was the bottom, the nadir of Catholic hypocrisy.
Right.
Of specifically not like Catholic parishioners. We're talking about the clergy here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I always have to make that clear because, you know, while we're talking American history, whenever Americans start saying, hey, maybe those Catholics aren't a great idea, it's not there's something wrong with the hierarchy. It's Catholics right. need to be shot into the sun. So,
yeah. And then
that never ends well.
Mm-hmm.
A quote I heard the other day, the popes may come and go, but the curia always lasts.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And so while we are specifically talking about the clergy and the hierarchy of the Holy See, if it were just watering homeless people, I'd be okay with that. I really would. I wouldn't be okay with that, but I will take that over.
It's sustainable gardening.
Yeah. Jeez.
I had to go there.
Wow. We're jerks today. Jeez.
I'm glad you said it because it was in my head, and I'm like, no, 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 don't.
I only refer to them as cats that you discipline with a spray bottle. Yeah. Like, how much worse can I get at this point?
This is just horrible. like this says nothing nice about you having done this. But if this was it, and we weren't talking about child rape, and we weren't talking about the further destruction of a continent,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you know, and basically trying to control people's very lives, they take hold,
encouraging the spread of HIV because you're against prophylactics.
Right?
There are so many terrible. This one, I think it just stands out because it's such an obvious and ironic example of like really you say one thing and that's helped the poor. Like, you had one job.
That's true. yeah. I don't want to take this. Is ridiculous. It's stupid and ridiculous, and it really shows where the caring is. I mean, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we feed the poor. We're Christians always like to say we are the most charitable people. Catholics specifically say the Vatican, the whole hierarchy, the whole shebang, all the gold plated toilets and whatever. Maybe I'm getting that mixed up with some reality TV guy.
Liberace.
But that's all in the service of charity.
And
no.
Well, the charity is fine to give to people so long as you don't have to actually see what happens after you give them the charity.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actual, you know, day-to-day life of a homeless person is too, you know, aesthetically displeasing for someone.
Mm-hmm. I was going to have this argument about, well, I mean, let's turn it around. Would you be okay with homeless people sleeping on your porch? And then I remembered where I lived, and I'm like, well,
that happens.
Yeah. And I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's just when you just look at the entire picture, and it just makes me chuckle to think, okay, so this international organization that has billions of dollars, run by a guy who lives in a giant palace and sits on a gold throne, tells you to be nice to poor people, and one of his churches spent money to build sprinklers to spray poor people away.
Yeah.
Like,
Oh, boy. So how about we talk about a more honest church?
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Florida authorities have removed a local church's tax-exempt status for hosting parties considered unbefitting of a church. The Life Center has been running a nightly series of events called Amnesia, the Tabernacle, which includes lingerie slumber parties featuring the sexiest ladies on the beach and anything but clothes body painting party and a wet and wild water themed with a little twerking. Local Sheriff Frank McKeithen says the hosts of parties are using the church's status to bypass local laws, calling it a slap in the face to taxpayers.
Here's my thought on this, if I may.
Go on.
Right on.
This sheriff is probably right. This pastor who has had run-ins with the law before is probably using a church status to bypass laws. But it is not this sheriff's place to decide what church counts and what church doesn't. Like,
and how do we know that this isn't part of this isn't how they waggling the buttocks doesn't isn't specifically to glorify their God? How do we know?
I want to know which version of the Bible twerking is used in. It's got to be like sanctioned in there somewhere.
And thus the Lord did make buttocks and have them jiggle.
Yeah, jeez. Honestly, I saw that opinion before. I saw somebody else with a very similar opinion. Fred Clark on Pantheos, who's a minister and has a blog, who I think I've mentioned a few times. But yeah, that's where he basically said, yeah, probably not a church, but...
Not your call.
How do we know?
Yeah.
How do we know?
Yeah, and I feel like this is a case where we could get a whole bunch of religious people on our side to say, no, we don't want the government deciding what counts and what doesn't.
Well, hang on a second here. There are churches that have sort of a spiritual dance component.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There are signs, there are churches, there are religions where you have signs painted on yourselves or symbolic mm-hmm. tattoos.
Okay, try and shoehorn in the lingerie.
You have the Mormons who wear a very specific type of underwear.
There you go.
Well done.
I guess twerking could fall under dancing. Like, all of this stuff happens somewhere in religion, just not as obvious. So how do you know? Maybe we're just talking about really hip Mormons.
Twerking in spiritual ecstasy. That's going to be the name of like my LP when I go into techno music.
Yeah, I could say, yeah, probably not a church, but why? How do we know? I mean,
we
must go to this church and find out.
Here's the thing is, are any of these actions any weirder than holding up poisonous snakes? And they're certainly less damaging, both to people.
I can see an argument being made either way, but I'm going to go with death by poisonous snakes is worse than...
Than twerk, jiggling of thy buttocks.
Yeah.
And that could be like, body painting.
That's a Pilates class if you try hard enough. I mean...
Hey, yeah, and the lady from Northern Exposure did a Christ toga thing.
What?
With Christian Christianizing yoga. So
Christian yoga.
I think we found a Christian basis, or at least a religious basis, for everything that happens at this church.
Mm-hmm.
So how is this not a church? I mean, there's a million churches called Life Center. There's right. like three of them in Tacoma.
Yeah.
And they all do... You know, I think one of them's got the pastor with the tattoos, and they have right. the rock band and all that stuff. And this is just
groovy or funkier pastor, yeah. if you will.
Groovy, funky, channel 27.
Yeah.
Is this not just the logical extent? Is this not where this goes? And clearly, you're going to have a group of Christians who are saying Christianity must be straight-backed wooden pews and out-of-tune music.
Right.
But... Nobody listens to them anyway.
It sounds like kind of the focus is that the church was... There's kind of the idea of a church also being a community center.
Yeah.
And classes will happen there just as any other thing, and community events will happen. This is just a kind of... I'm not defending it in any way, but it's kind of a...
See,
extension.
I kind of am. And mark this on your calendars, ladies. I am defending a church.
I don't care what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying I could see as a community-focused area that...
And drunk frat boys in Florida for spring break need a community like this.
Yeah.
Like,
why don't they get a church?
And here's the thing. One of these lines, it says...
the dude bra church of
yeah,
Christ.
Yeah. You could put it in a sex offender prison and solve two problems at once. It would be great.
No, and it says here, like, they lost their tax-exempt status for parties considered unbefitting of a church. Well,
is that a law?
One of the mega churches here in Tacoma has a coffee shop into it. Do you think the Mormons consider a coffee shop in a church unbefitting of a church?
Probably.
Hmm.
Do they get to make that decision?
Well, in Utah, they do. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I think we're going to get in trouble for that last segment, but we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to try to keep things going.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present convention and its subject, the nominee. ANNEX Radio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'm still Sam. Rosalind and Dave are still with me.
Hello.
Hi.
And while this is not a moment of science, this is definitely going to be a science-heavy segment. For example, a German court is ordering an anti-vax biologist to pay a 100,000 euro prize that he'd offered for proof that measles exists. Stefan Lonka, who believes that measles is psychosomatic, originally offered the prize to anyone who could prove that the disease is a virus. When Dr. David Barden's offered six academic studies in answer, Lonka refused to accept the proof. The court decided in Barden's favor after hearing 3 hours of expert testimony and ordered Lonka to pay the prize.
I know we don't do drops on the show, but if we could get a Nelson Muntz drop.
Okay. Yeah, maybe a little fail trumpet in here. I like this one, but I have a feeling that Germany, laws in Germany are weird.
They're always kind of funky.
Yeah, I really can't, there's always like something I don't get. And I have a feeling that this is that it's specifically German law that allows this, because otherwise we would have been hearing about this in the United States for some time. Like, one of my favorite people on Earth, Kent Hovind, offered several $100,000 or $500,000 to prove that evolution is true.
$250,000,
thank you. So somewhere between $100,000 and $500,000.
Right.
Technically, I was correct.
You were correct, sir.
Thank you, Ed.
That is a number.
Oh, there's an oblique reference for you. Anyway, but yeah, it's, you know, he was offered proof several times, but his standard for proof was kind of, well, one, it was a moving goalpost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And two, it was fairly obvious that he was never going to offer the money, because the whole point was for him to say, well, I'm offering $250,000 to anybody who can prove evolution, but nobody's taking it because you can't prove evolution. Now I'm going to just talk at you for a million years and make fun of my kids.
Was this kind of a weird response to the James Randi $1 million thing?
I think it might have been. Where James Randi's thing would probably stand up in the same court. And I bet you somebody's going to challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bet you that's the next step in this particular dance.
Well, and the way that James Randi does that, I think, is actually really good for setting that up, and that they make sure that the person who is being tested approves their methods before they do it. They
right.
they work together to come up with a test that everyone can accept.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's tough after you fail whatever test that you yourself set up that you can sue somebody and say, well, it wasn't fair. Well, why'd you do the test in the first place?
Yeah.
And in the case of this anti-vax guy, I have to wonder, he believes that measles is psychosomatic?
Yeah. It's like, so you've got anti-vaxxers, but then you've got
this guy.
It's all in your headers.
So would he consider it proof if I injected him with measles and asked him to think it away?
Would it be proof? Yes. But it would also be assault.
Yeah,
that's
probably
so,
true.
Kind of got to be
Can I get his permission first?
There's someone on Craigslist that I'm sure would agree. They're like, yeah, inject me with measles. All right.
It strikes me as more of a back page thing. yeah, I just said that. Ah, boy. So.
And right back into the gutter we are.
Yes, indeed. I think it might be time to move on. A comprehensive meta-study in Australia concluded that homeopathic medicine is no more effective than a placebo. The Australian National Health and Medical Research Council looked at over 1,800 previous studies of homeopathic treatments and weeded out any that didn't meet proper scientific standards. The 225 remaining papers showed no evidence to support homeopathy's effectiveness. The scientists also found that the vast majority of papers claiming homeopathy is successful have either too few participants, poor design, poor conduct, and or reporting to allow reliable conclusions. One researcher stressed that people who choose homeopathy may put their health at risk if they reject or delay treatments for which there is good evidence for safety and effectiveness. So first things first, I don't know how to pronounce that word. Homeopathy.
Homeopathy.
I mean, you know, St. Patrick's Day was recently, so homeopathy. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it, and frankly, I don't really care to be corrected, because, hey,
it's not actually a thing. Like,
I'll just take the word, and I'll put 7,000 more letters on it, then I will pick three at random, and add 7,000 more letters, then pick three more at random, and add 7,000 more letters, then pick five letters, and that'll be the word.
There you go.
Okay, I'm glad we settled that.
Yes. Anyway, but homeopathy, I mean,
Homeopathy.
Whatever.
I can't actually say the way I pronounce it on air. I'd get arrested.
Fair enough. So, yet another study. Well, okay. Yet another 1,800 studies.
This is pretty comprehensive. If they went through 1,800 studies, only found 225 that actually meets scientific standards.
But here's the thing. You know how these guys work. What they're going to say is they had 1,800 studies to work with, and they only picked the 225 that said it was bad. They were cherry picking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
that's the next move in this dance.
That's the way they're going to spin it. But
yeah, scientific standards, what are those?
That doesn't change the fact that out of 1,800 studies, only 225 actually had more than 10, you know, subjects in it.
Mm-hmm. 225 studies. Look at her awesome Photoshop. I don't know if you look at like the anti-GMO guys or the anti-vax guys. Or
do they
whatever.
Use lots of lens flares?
No.
Oh, okay.
Man, if they spent
10% of the time, as they did developing their Photoshop skills, actually, like, learning how to do scientific research, they may have proved that this stuff is all terrible by now.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, seriously, they do really good work. I've seen three or four that looked like it was going to be the next Tool album. I mean, it was really good. But it's saying just like this complete junk, like vaccinations is made out of cancer and mercury and the skin flakes of Alex Jones and whatever.
Now I'm all hearing it in Maynard from Tool's voice.
So. Yeah. Well,
I think it's important. Another one that they're going to try and spin is like, well, more effective than a placebo, but placebos work. So this works too.
Yo, I love that.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And it's like, I think it's important to make clear that placebo is the background noise.
Right.
Okay. If you're talking, or if you're in a crowded room with a whole bunch of people talking, if you don't speak above that background noise, you might as well not be speaking. Mm-hmm. If homeopathy isn't more effective than that background noise of placebo effect, then it's not effective.
Repeated punches in the head treat cancer as well as a placebo, and the side effects are minimal. So, you know, slight concussion.
Possible headaches.
That's headaches. YouTube video science.
Bruising. Yes. So obviously getting punched in the head cures cancer.
Yeah.
Let me get my Photoshop out. That's basically the logic here. We're making fun of this. Like, I'm saying 7,000 letters in homeopathy, but I'm only picking three. Punching in the head cures cancer. This is what they do. This is the logic under which they work. Like these wonderfully done things explaining how chlorophyll is exactly like blood, therefore cleans unspecified toxins out of the body.
I love the word toxins. They don't know what it means.
What are toxins?
It's a nonsense word in the context that they're using.
Reasonably certain cyanide's a toxin.
Yeah. But when they say it cleans out toxins, they mean it cleans out magical bad stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same way people use chemicals as a universally bad term.
Yeah. I'm not a scientist. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but I know chlorophyll isn't blood. I've tasted both. They're very different.
That was a bad day.
Yeah. Pretty much. Boy. Yeah, I'm going to miss homeopathy when it's gone because it's so easy, but there will be, you know, there won't be people dying of it anymore.
That's true. I did like the cartoon I saw where a guy goes up to a counter at a pharmacy, puts down a homeopathic. See, you got me doing it too. Great. Thank you very much.
You've been memed.
He puts down a homeopathic remedy and the cashier says, that'll be $14.99. He pulls out a glass of water and cuts a little corner off his dollar bill and walks out.
Okay. Oh, you get what you pay for. Ha-cha-cha-da-da-cha.
So we have Sean from Chilliwack, British Columbia. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I think it's Chilliwack.
Chilliwack, not Chilliwack. Okay. I just finished listening to your latest podcast with Dan Arell, and I thought I would pass on my quick story. Although you didn't spend too much time on the Nye-Ham debate, I credit this debate as the vehicle that sent me on the road to atheism and freethinking. After the debate, I delved into YouTube videos and podcasts on atheism, which eventually led me to your show. As much as people harp on the fact that Ken Ham had more to gain from the debate than Bill Nye did, I have to take the other side of the argument and say that Ken Ham and creationists in general were left looking pretty silly afterwards. Well, color me refuted.
Ed, welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I've only watched little bits of it, and I don't think you've seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I've read about how it went down.
Right, and I've got that book I'm going through.
How is that going, by the way?
Why I Won by Ken Ham. I mean, it's
I Rule by Ken Ham.
I rule
King George's History of the American Revolution. I mean, it's oh, jeez, it's ridiculous.
I rule, you drool. This is science.
We're getting into like third grade level bathroom graffiti.
We are, because that's what Ken Ham deserves at this point.
Oh, totally.
Although he is, like I've said before, he is growing into that beard. I thought it looked terrible 10 years ago, but it looks pretty okay now.
Yeah. You know, mine's better.
Fashion. Fashion of the creationist.
My beard's better than all of yours.
Sorry. I do want to say, like, you know, I'm fascinated by Sean's email because, you know, so many people take so many different paths into the community.
Yeah.
Where, you know, when I, you know, going back, I haven't been a believer since high school, but Debates didn't really do it for me. Like, that was, and you know, if I went into a debate believing something, I came out of that debate believing the same thing. I was very rarely convinced by them. So I find it interesting that for him, that was such a big catalyst.
I actually kind of like how you're, I feel the same way where debates don't really persuade me to one point of view or another overtly, but it does, during the course of the debate, people will bring things up that make me want more information. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting because two points of view are presented. I end up learning more generally about the topic later because I go, oh, okay, well, that guy's arguing against this thing. I should go investigate a little bit, which mm-hmm. I kind of like.
Well, that's true. Big surprise. I love debate. I was in legal and parliamentary debate in high school, and I've got a pile of trophies with some guy standing on them. Debate trophies are the worst trophies because you got somebody playing soccer. It's an action thing. Somebody swinging a baseball. Somebody, you know, shooting hoops. What do you get for debate? A guy standing. And well, sometimes, if you're lucky, in front of a lectern.
That's what you get for an Oscar as well, so.
Yeah, but at least you get, like, the stylized, like, Metropolis-looking guy. You know, I get Barker on a bad day.
Did they just, like, cut the male half off of, like, the wedding cake thing and, like, bronze it?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But being in debate kind of proved, to me, kind of showed me the inefficacy of debate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you got two people arguing, you're never changing their minds. And rhetoric, while I really appreciate rhetoric as a skill, rhetoric is really good at obfuscating facts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's never about who's got the better facts and who has a better idea of how reality works. It's who's a better talker.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who can say it better?
Yeah. And you know what? I hate to say it, but for the most part, Christians have a leg up on us because this is a part of, like, they go to school for this stuff. They have entire schools where the only thing they do is teach you how to say stuff nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so my assumption has always been that in debates like this, especially high profile debates like this, they generally don't serve. That has been my opinion. I think I have to change that opinion.
Sean is definitely evidence against that.
Yeah, because apparently they looked real bad. I might have to go back and look at it to see what, you know, maybe look at it with different eyes. And
see, one of the things for me in debate is I think everyone should learn how, because I think that it serves people well to learn, especially when you're... what type of debate is it when they give you a side regardless of what you believe and you need to defend that side?
Well, they did that in mine.
Yeah. Yeah. And most debate classes, particularly in high school level and I think college level, will do that. And it's a really great way to build empathy for you to argue a side that you don't necessarily believe, to have to go out, find the information, find what's compelling. And, you know, afterwards, you're left better able to argue against that because you understand in a more real way and not the straw man way that we tend to see opposing issues.
In my debate team, like you in legal and parliamentary debate, you run Robert's Rules of Order, which is why I know them and why I try very hard to forget it. and you write bills, and the person who writes the bill generally has to write the for and against, both the for and the against packet. And what side you're debating usually ends up being what's more tactically appropriate for the room that you're in. And so I've had to take, in high school, I had to take pro-life arguments. I had to take the anti-abortion side in arguments to see how to win the game, basically. So it showed me how bad, you know, how debate is not a tool for changing people's minds with reality. It also showed me that representative democracy is kind of junk. I mean, it was really good for my skill set, but really bad for my hope for humanity at the end of the day.
I was going to go back on what you were saying. The idea of teaching debate skills, I think, might make people just a little less jumpy or take everything so personally, too. If you go, okay, well, I understand what the person is going through because, like, back in high school, an arbitrary opinion was assigned to you and you have to back it up. You kind of go, okay, well, it's ultimately not about me, that we're just having a conversation here.
Well,
you know what I mean?
You'd have to pair it with listening lessons.
Yeah, active listening skills.
Even active listening is kind of a junk. Like, actually paying, maybe just paying attention skills. I don't know. Maybe I'm the wrong guy to talk about that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look at this. And in fact, Sean, if you want to tell me specifically what changed your mind, maybe some sort of annotation on it, and I can go through it and see what was going on, I'd actually really like that.
But that's, unfortunately, all the time we've got for today.
It's my favorite song.
This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Mulvey. We had Dave Brulette and Rosalind Townsend on. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. If all goes well, next week, we're live again. See you guys then.